Good afternoon. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Nick Baer.
And I'm your co-host, Nolan Altbader. Thank you all for tuning in and listening with us today here on Dawnland Signals. Today, we will be having a discussion about the interconnections between running and Indigenous connections to our homelands and cultures. And I couldn't think of a better time to have this conversation as our LY relatives make their journeys inland to their spawning homes. The Passamaquoddy people have an entire moon dedicated to this time, which we call Siguanameki Gizlus, the L-Wife Moon. Like the L-Wives, running has also been a way in which we have built relationships with and within our homelands across generations, and this is what we will be exploring today. To bring this discussion to life, we are joined by Dene runner Dustin Martin, who is a chief visionary office of Wings of America, a Santa Fe-based organization that works to build healthy Native communities by empowering youth through running. We will also be joined by Brian Altvader, who is a Passamaquoddy elder with a deep experience in running and community organizing as the Wabanaki Wellness Coordinator for Wabanaki Reach and a founding member of the Skudik Riverkeepers here in what is now Maine. Before our guests introduce themselves, we first want to start with appreciating the land. Nick, do you mind walking us through that?
On the cusp of full spring bloom in Wabanaki territory, it is a beautiful time. I am eternally grateful whenever I realize that we all experience the turning of the seasons together with all the relatives who walk this land beside us. I know that trying to care for the land in the same way my ancestors did may not always be seen or rewarded, but it is never done for that reason. I do what I do for my homeland because I love where I live and want my future generations to see it treated better someday. Opening up to what is around us and letting nature be more than the background setting to our main character is not always an easy task. Please take time to listen to the birds, smell the flowers, or put your gutguzitl in the mud or on the grass. These gestures are small enough to practice daily. I challenge everyone listening to this to take 5 minutes today and then again tomorrow to try it out. Open up to Mother Earth and listen to what she has to say. Open up your palms to Grandfather Sun and Grandmother Moon. Let yourself receive these blessings each and every day and give thanks for being here. The present is a gift. Let us be proud of where our seeds were planted and the roots that connect us to our past relations and their knowledge systems. Let us be a support for all people and living things. We have a responsibility to provide spaces for voices of decolonization. It is an honor to be a part of Dawnland Signals, and I am humbled by the opportunity to connect with my Wabanaki relatives in a new way that only could have been in my ancestors' wildest dreams. Psidegeg Nidwi Nudnamin Gdakmiguk. Everything I need, I get from the earth. Kchiwiliwan Ndilbemwak. Thank you so much, all my relations.
Ooh, Chi Willy won for that, Nick. And I'd love to give our audiences a chance to get to know our guest here and sharing y'all's relationships to running. So do you mind briefly introducing yourselves and sharing with us how you got into running and what it has meant to you and your communities? And here in Wabanakic, it's elders first. So Brian, do you mind starting us off?
Thank you, Nolan. Brian Altvater Sr. I'm a grandfather, great grandfather, father of three. I've been at Sivayak my entire life. I was actually born in Muzalink, which is Eastport. It's 5 miles down the road. And I was born in November 1955. And oddly enough, there's no longer a hospital there. But I used to listen to stories of some of the elders, and they used to tell me about how one individual threw the rope off of a boat in Calais, and when he threw the rope off, and the boat took off, and it went into Eastport, and then when he got to Eastport, he was at the dock or the pier, and tied the boat up, and that was about approximately a 30-mile run. And later on, that became they did something called the Super Joggers Day, where you'd run from Calais to Eastport. But that's another story in itself. But I used to really like listening to the stories of the elders in regards to running, and most of the running events, you know, they did long distance. Of course, you had your sprinters and you know, Sibayigan and Madakmegog, which is Pleasant Point in Indian Township, always had, you know, really great baseball teams. And, you know, you had to be pretty clever and pretty fast to play that game, especially if you were playing in the outfield. And just about everyone played baseball in our communities. So we used to watch them every Sunday. And I just enjoyed being out there running along the beach or wherever, and a lot of my friends did too. And in order to get anywhere, we walked. I mean, you know, it's sometimes miles, and if it was real far, we'd hitchhike. But I always enjoyed running. Whenever there was a foot race, 4th of July in Eastport, a bunch of us would go down there, and there'd be prizes, $3, $4, whatever, a lot of money to us. So and running's always been a part of my life. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Brian. Yat e she Dustin Martin dash Jene, Bish Bachatnishle, Ta Chitney Bashish Chin, New Yorker dash a cheeky Ani Dashanele, Nat Najoji Dant Nasha, Chin Lee Dishidishi, Bel Dil Dasanil Dishagan, Wings of America Nashnish. Hello, everyone. They call me Dustin, or anything with dust in it, Dustbuster, Dust Devil, anything of that sort. And I'm a runner. I've been a runner since I was probably 12 years old, practically speaking, but in my mind, much younger than that. My main inspiration to run from childhood was hearing my mom go out in the morning with the dogs, and I just knew that she was always moving. We lived out south of a place called Gallup, New Mexico, in a place called Chichilta, and my mom, without fail, just was moving every morning. And as I grew, she was. I mean, as I grew in utero, she was coaching the Gallup Bengals, a bunch of native runners that became legendary under Coach Curtis Williams there in Gallup, New Mexico. And when I was a baby, I would be watched by the kids who were too injured to run at the time. And as I grew, when I was in middle school, my mom was assistant coaching again, and I just grew to idolize some runners who at the time I just saw as, you know, my idols. But in retrospect, I realize now that those runners were Wings Runners, the organization that I now work for. They were representing something bigger than themselves and showing on a bigger platform that native runners and native people were still very strong and swift. So I idolized those runners growing up and saw running very quickly as a way to. Right now, I would see almost embarrassed to admit this, but at an early age, saw running as a way to distinguish myself, and to maybe earn an opportunity to go to school, to go new places. I watched a wings runner by the name of Felicia Gulliford in particular. She's part Zia and part African American, but she was just astonishing at that age, and I wanted to test my legs in the same way. So I would tag along as long as I could at those high school practices. And eventually my family and I, or my mom and my brother and I, we moved to Albuquerque when right before my 8th grade year. And so I was kind of extracted from what I felt was my future running for the Gallup Bengals. But I let running continue to guide me and competed for a private high school called Albuquerque Academy. And that eventually took me on to Columbia University in New York City, where I ran for 4 years. But all through that, wings continued to be a guiding light for me. And I had the opportunity to represent on two wings national teams, racing both in New York City as a high school junior and then in Boulder, Colorado, on these elite teams that wings recruits from the fastest native runners in the country every year. And then eventually worked for wings during the summers, leading free camps for kids, all across the Southwest. And then after I graduated, I had the opportunity to move home and work for Wings full time. But I will say it's Wings that really helped me become more aware and proud of running, not for the sake of notoriety or for individualistic pursuits, but for the sake of communing with our landscape, and doing something that our ancestors have done for time immemorial. And I find it fitting that, you folks there in Maine, what is now Maine, call it the Dawnland, because as Navajos, we are taught that every morning we're to rise with the sun and face east and run towards the sun, and scream and yell and let the holy people know that we're awake and that we're using the day for what it's meant to be used for. And so I really look forward to visiting the Dawnland soon for my first time ever, seeing Indian Island, where I've only heard in stories about Andrew Sakalexis running. And yeah, it is a very far east point on this continent. And so as a Diné person, it will be a pilgrimage for me to go that far east and to run that far east, especially with young people. So I'm really looking forward to that opportunity.
Wow. Okay. So it must be y'all that I'm hearing in the morning screaming all the way here now. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Dustin and Brian. And I kind of want to really think of running beyond what it's kind of understood as today. When I think of running today, I feel like dominant culture has really transformed it into a means of a competitive activity or an individual exercise where achievement or value is measured by quantifiable units. And whereas, I'm not a runner myself, but I imagine that this is very different for, indigenous peoples and communities around the globe. So I want to kick it back to you, Dustin. I know as you've been running throughout your career, you also studied anthropology, and I feel like have applied those two interests within your work. So I'm interested, how do you connect running as both this ancestral way of being and knowing, but something that's also carried, on today in modern forms and times?
Yeah, that's a tough question. But I think for me, what it really comes down to is having a deep and intimate understanding of where you live, your surroundings. Right. And this day and age, we are so quick to enter an address into our phones and let it take us where we're supposed to go. And that is just something very new for humanity. And I think for you to be able to orient yourself and know where you're going and know your surroundings and know how things are changing around you, it's best to be on your feet. As Brian expressed, as a young person, he was always walking someplace, moving someplace on his feet. And I think that even though there are so many more technologies available to us this day and age that allow us to get places faster or more efficiently, they don't help us understand our landscapes and the natural resources that are blossoming or dying, depending on the seasons through the course of that travel. Kids can sit in a car and look at a screen and go from point A to point B, but really learn nothing about where they've been in the process. And for me, that is really what running offers everyone on this continent, on this world, is a deeper understanding of where they're existing and in turn who they are, because we are the land, we are the environment that fosters us. And so for me, it's absolutely necessary that we cover that landscape on our feet, and from a more, modern, individualistic, dare I say, capitalistic perspective, it really is inventorying our resources, right? Knowing what is changing, knowing what has happened. I here in Albuquerque, where Wings is based, there are, over the years in high school, I ran places that are now developed neighborhoods. And I wouldn't know that or take note of those things had I not covered those areas on my feet. There are waterways. This is in particular for me very starkly important, is the creeks in the foothills of the Sandias here in Albuquerque that used to run every late spring, early summer, and now they're not doing that. And that's a very important shift and a change for us to know. And you only know that if you cover those streams on your feet. It's easy to drive right over and not know whether or not how the water is running or if it's running. And so I don't know exactly how that relates to me studying anthropology in college, but I do know that me studying anthropology was more a byproduct of me being a runner, because I had a professor who came to me and said, "Hey, like, have you ever read this book called Indian Running by a UCLA professor named Peter Nabokov?" And I said, "No, had no idea this was something that people, quote unquote, studied." And so all I knew is I was there in New York City to run. I didn't know anything about the core curriculum of this university or what I was supposed to really like, what the trajectory of my education looked like. I just knew that I had the opportunity to run there. And so that was really why I went. But through the course of that experience, running also kept me grounded and made sure that I stayed sane in a city that can really just swallow people up and spit them out. And my daily runs into Central Park and traversing the city over to Riverside and, communing with the landscape and the living creatures around me, really, like I said, was my saving grace through a time that for a lot of young people can be very confusing, and also very, there's a lot of temptations to do things that are not the best for your body and your mind.
Some beautiful imagery that you painted for us, Dustin. Will you one? So I would like to remind our listeners, you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am co-host Nick Bear, along with my good Nita and co-host Nolan Altibater. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are having a conversation about the roles of running within Indigenous communities as a way to connect with our homelands and build healthy communities. We are joined by Dustin Martin, who you just heard speak, a Diné runner and chief visionary officer of Wings of America, a Santa Fe-based organization that works to build healthy Native communities by empowering youth through running, and also a tribal elder, Brian Altivator, who is a Passamaquoddy with a deep experience in running and community organizing as the Wabanaki Wellness Coordinator for Wabanaki Reach.
And we were just sort of connecting, running in the context more of within Indigenous communities rather than it being a sort of, individual exercise that's really measured by, competitiveness or quantifiable units, and sort of what it means to run as an Indigenous person with a deep connection to your homelands. And I'm wondering, Brian, if you had anything to offer in that regards to your own experiences as a runner?
There wasn't much opportunity to compete. We had to drive 40 miles away, and there used to be an organization called the Washington County or Sunrise County Roadrunners, and you'd race against people of your own age. Actually, it was just one run. It was, I think, 3 miles, and you got a ribbon. And so every week, a bunch of us would go up there, and depending on what place you got a ribbon. And after a while, even though it was just a ribbon, it meant something that you went up there and competed against other people that were, your age, older, and stuff like that. And some of the people that used to run there became really good throughout the state of Maine. There was a guy from Calais that ran, I think, a 2-hour and 20-minute marathon. That's really quick. And Red Sapiel, who was recreation director, would take us kids there. We were anywhere from 10 to 15 years old. He'd take us there every week, and we'd compete doing that. And and once running gets in your blood, you do it without thinking sometimes. Sometimes we'd be miles from home, and we'd all run back, to the reserve and stuff. So, it was rewarding and made you feel better. And I just always enjoyed running.
Really won. And I want to kind of transition to sort of what running looks like in our communities today from where we're coming from. And Dustin, you've mentioned you being with Wings for quite some time. I believe you've worked for them for 15 years, but also, was a runner as part of the organization as a runner too through your earlier career. And I really want to give you a chance to talk about the Wings as an organization and what you offer for Indigenous communities across Turtle Island. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about the programs you do?
Yeah, you bet. Wings has been around since 1988, so a little over 35 years. And really, the organization was founded with the understanding that Native runners, Native youth runners, there was so much more opportunity out there that they were capable of embracing and rising to the occasion, but maybe just didn't have the resources to do so. And so initially, Wings recruited, or they held a selection race for the Wings national team. This is our longest running program where we recruit a team of the fastest Native high school runners in the country from all over the country and then sponsor them to a national level cross country meet. For many years, that was USA Cross Country Championships, but now we're taking kids to Running Lane, which happens in Huntsville, Alabama in December. This speaks to, I think, the evolution of Wings' concept and understanding of running, because initially, like I said, it was focused on these youth distinguishing themselves, earning opportunities to either go to college or race bigger races, and pursue notoriety in a lot of ways, and that and their individual notoriety created more opportunities for the runners behind them in the competitive sphere. But very soon after that, everyone wants to be associated with a winner. So soon after, the first Wings national teams, they went to Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and they won in the junior race. And people were kind of like astonished, like, oh, who are these Native kids that are just, ran away with the competition? And other brands like Nike wanted to hop on board and sponsor Wings programs. And for a time, there were regional Wings affiliates, and there was a team of Wings of the Northern Plains, Wings of the Great Lakes, Wings of the Northeast, and each of those regions would send a national level team to these national competitions. But soon after that, or in the process of that, I should say, 2 years into programs, Wings started to understand that these high achieving competitive level athletes were also potentially great mentors to the next generation. And so they started to hire and train them to coordinate what we call now our summer running and fitness camps. And these are free camps for kids hosted in tribal communities that Wings has been doing since the early 90s, if not maybe the tail end of the 80s, sending high school and college age kids who are passionate runners out to share the message of running and the practical knowledge of how do you stretch, how do you do dynamic warm-ups, and also more importantly, how do you have a lot of fun playing running tag ball games with other youth. Just to get kids moving during a time of year when, unfortunately, there's not so much enrichment, especially in tribal communities these days. And so, of course, they share their opportunities as competitive runners, but more importantly, they talk about what running is to us as Native people, and that the endurance that our ancestors show, the resilience that they show, is by virtue of the fact that they spend a lot of time on their feet from sun up to sundown. If you're from the Southwest, you were either foraging or farming food. Other parts of the country, same, foraging food. You had to spend a lot of time on your feet in order to survive. And that is why we were such great runners from the get-go. Turn of the century, running or pedestrianism became something that people competed in. And right off the bat, there were Native runners all the way at the top of those rankings, going to the Olympics, representing which at that time was a very fledgling nation in the United States. It's really ironic that, a lot of times those young people that were representing the United States in international competition just a few years or even months prior had been told that their culture was virtually useless, and it was tried to be wrung out of them. But then we're asked to represent the United States on a high level and show the strength of a nation through sports. So it really, at the end of the day, Wings is really about identifying this lineage of running and movement and endurance on our feet for Native youth, and helping them understand that we come from this culture of strength. And that running is something that we can be proud of, but also that we need to sort of defend this legacy for future generations, because it has created so many positive avenues for Native people to represent themselves in the dominant culture in a way that the dominant culture understands. And it may need to win a gold medal at the Olympics like Billy Mills in 1964, or, run really fast at the Boston Marathon. And that's kind of how you hook people in. And that's how Wings has hooked a lot of supporters in. But then from there, you can speak more to what we believe is the core value of running, which is connection to your ancestral homelands, as well as the opportunity to encourage the next generation to take care of their mind, body, and spirit. And that's the other piece, right? Is that so many people see running strictly as, or not so many people, at surface level, a lot of people see running as a physical feat or a physical challenge. But anyone who knows it more than, having to run the mile in gym in middle school knows that it's also a mental and spiritual venture, and that you can really strengthen yourself to be a good relative with the help of running, not just to the land that you're communing with while running or walking, but also to the people and the creatures that you share that landscape with.
Yeah, wow, that's just so much to take in and covered a lot of bases there. I feel like, yeah, like, the indigenous people, we often mention, like, getting the attention by really excelling, in these spaces of dominant culture, but obviously doing it for a much larger reason for that, and coming from a different place than what that dominant culture might view as the norms around running. And I just appreciate the way that you framed it. Again, I'm not a runner, but, like, if I was hearing that in gym class, someone framing it like that, I would definitely consider Maybe trying it out more. So thank you for sharing all of that. And Brian, I feel like I have a relationship with you, obviously, and you doing the work that you do in here in what's now Maine and Wabanaki Homeland and Passamaquoddy Homeland. I feel like there's so much a lot of intersection here between sort of running and its relationship to not only healing people, but also healing the land. And I'm wondering if you don't mind sharing the work that you do with the Skudik River Keepers and organizing the annual Skudik River Alewife Run. Do you mind sharing a little bit what this event is and its connection to, the ongoing restoration of the Skudik River?
Before I get to that, I worked at the Pleasant Point Health Center for 24 years, and we have our fair share of diabetics within our community, as most Native communities do. So we started a walking club, and we got a lot of volunteers from the health center, and we'd walk with the kids from the grammar school several times a week. And you had your walkers that were pretty fast walkers. You had some that weren't so fast. And we had elderly walking with the children. And it was like the kids would pick a certain person to walk with, and they almost develop a bond and a friendship with that individual, regardless of who they were. And then we had, it was in the late 80s, we had something called, the diabetes walk and run, but we eventually split that up so we would just have walkers and then we would just have runners. So we had two separate events, and sometimes we would get hundreds of people, doing that each and every year around the ceremonial weekend, the second weekend of August. And that was so nice to see because we made up these shirts and depending on what color the shirts were, we'll say red, blue, or whatever, people would see these hundreds of walkers walking down the causeway, between Sivayig and Kalau Island and then coming back. So, and that was to bring awareness, and people want to be healthy. And, it wasn't that competitive, although, people would want to, walk against a friend or a family member and stuff like that. So that was one of the things we did to bring the awareness to diabetes, and that walking would lower your blood sugar. And then if you wanted to lower your blood sugar, you start thinking about your diet and stuff like that. So back, I'm going to say, in the late 90s, I found out that the Skudik River, it used to be the Passamaquoddy River, a lot of people know it as the St. Croix River, international boundary between the state of Maine and Canada. And in Challis, there's a dam there, used to be a dam there called Milltown Dam. And this dam prevented the migration of alewives up the river. And eventually, the river splits off into two branches. One continues up the boundary of the state of Maine in New Brunswick, and the other one goes towards Madakmeeguk, which is Indian Township. At one point, they estimated between 45 and 80 million alewives would migrate up the river every spring, and this is spring right now. So they've already begun, and they'll be migrating up there till I would say June. So they said between 45 and 80 million fish. Just think about that. The old story says that you could put a stick in the water and the stick wouldn't fall over because there were so many alewives in the river. And that they brought the boats up into Canada, the small ships, and they would fill them up and take them overseas. And they thought that there was an inexhaustible supply of alewives and blueback herring. And so when they dammed it up in Callis, and that prevented the alewives from going up because they didn't have a fishway, In 2002, only 900 alewives were counted at Milltown. It's been a couple of years since the dam's been taken out in Milltown, and further up the river in Woodland. Last summer, we were successful in opening up the river in 2013. Since then, they estimated as much as, because we can't count the alewives in Milltown anymore, which is part of Calais, because the dam has been taken out. But we estimated that as much as 1.5 million fish migrated up the river last year. And we work with people on both sides of the border, from Canada, the United States, work with the state of Maine, the federal government. And the other thing too is, this is our ancestral homeland. And so, in the spring of the year, this would feed our people. There were no fast food places and stuff like that. And after a long, hard winter, I'm sure there's nothing that didn't taste any better than fiddleheads and alewives. And we call alewives a fish that feeds all. And they estimate, this is my opinion, they estimate that in this region, we only have about 2% of the alewives that used to be in virtually every river on both sides of the border. And there's some rivers that are still blocked because of dams and stuff like that. There's been pollution, there's been harvesting. They used to have log drives and stuff like that. And even though those log drives are 100 years old, 200 years ago, there's still bark and stuff like that on the bottom of the rivers that prevents them from migrating, because the water's in a sense dead. And so our goal is to open up all of the Schoodick River. Unfortunately, we have 18 or 19 rivers in the state of Maine that still harvest alewives. And I think that needs to be managed better. But the river keepers have done an excellent job, and it's taken everyone to make this change, because we feel the river belongs to everybody.
Oh, well said, Brian. I would say that you are a part of the River Keepers, the way that you have been continuing on this fight. So you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am co-host Nick Bear, along with my co-host Nolan Altivater. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are having a conversation about the roles of running within Indigenous communities as a way to connect to our homelands and build healthy communities. We are joined by Dustin Martin, a Dene runner and Chief Visionary Officer of Wings of America, a Santa Fe-based organization that works to build healthy Native communities by empowering youth through running, and Brian Altivater, who is a Passamaquoddy elder with a deep experience in running and community organizing as the Wabanaki Wellness Coordinator for Wabanaki Reach.
And Brian was just sharing with us the importance of the Schoodick River, otherwise known as the St. Croix River, as our, it being the heart of Passamaquoddy homeland and, the heart of the Passamaquoddy people, and the significance of the alewives. He framed it as the fish that feeds us all, and the impact that the dams have had on the river, and their their ancestral and rights to migrate. And Brian, I'm wondering now if you could frame The Skudik Elwife Run, the river run, that is coming up here in a few weeks. Can you just sort of share, what that run consists of in terms of the geography, where the journey is from, and sort of what that symbolizes for the people here?
May 23rd of this year, we'll gather at Sibayig by Split Rock, and a bunch of us will get together, and we'll have a run from here up towards Forest City. Dependent upon what time we get there, it's approximately 80 miles the route that we take, and we do a relay. And the reason we do a relay is, so we have more involvement with all the people that are will be running and walking. And so what we're trying to do is bring awareness to the health of the river. Or right now, as I speak, there's about 11 species of fish because of the dams that cannot access migrating up the river so they can spawn. As you know, some of the species like the American eel, the glass eels are called elvers. So they make some people mix up elvers with elwives. Elwives is the fish, and elvers is a juvenile American eel. So anyway, there's about 11 species that have been severely negatively impacted by the dams, pollution, over-harvesting. So anyway, so we bring awareness by doing this run. We welcome anybody that wants to participate. Initially, it was mostly just tribal members, but like I said earlier, this river belongs to all of us, and the health of this river belongs to all of us. And Wayne Newell 1 year sung a song, and in the song, he made it up, but I mean, he did it right on the spot. While he was drumming and speaking and chanting in our language, he basically said, way back when we depended upon the allies and we depended on them for sustenance, and a lot of our people would, smoke them so they could have them throughout the year. And he says, so when we were in trouble after a long winter, we'd rely on the allies. He said, now they're in trouble. It's up to us to take care of them. And so that was a really powerful song. And so, we do the Alewife Run, and we've got excellent partners from all over. We all contribute, and we have t-shirts. Last year in Township Monocmegog, one of the members of the team, actually he's from Machias, he's not a tribal member. They had Moose Stew, Tom Francis, and all this other stuff, and we had a really good good lunch in the in partway there. We had real serious runners. We had people that like to run here and there, and then we have other people that have fallen out of shape and gotten old, such as myself. But we all pull together, and we do this within the end of the day, and then we try to get initially we try to get news coverage, to give a positive spin and to raise an awareness about the river, and that we want it to be in really good shape. We've had people say, you'll never get back to the way it was. And my answer to that is, you're probably right, but we're going to try the best we can. So our legacy will live on after a lot of us are gone. And that's why we try to get the youth involved with doing this. And it's just a great time. The other thing about across from Forest City, Forest, you go across the border there, only about 2 miles or so is a place called Mud Lake Stream. Okay. And at Mud Lake Stream, they dug up, they did an archaeological dig there. Okay. And they estimated that the fish bones in that pit were at least 3,000 years old. And the bulk of the bones they found were alewives. And unfortunately, there's several dams that they have to get through, to get up there. But at the same time, they need free access to their natural spawning grounds, and all the alewives do is swim up there, spawn, head back out to sea. Unfortunately, there are invasive species in our watershed, and people seem to want to protect the smallmouth bass, and protect the largemouth bass and these other species. But the bottom line is, any river that has alewives in them migrating annually, the other species, including the invasive species, are bigger, they're fatter, they're longer. So again, this is a fish that feeds all. So we'll be doing the run again the 23rd of May, and we always have a good time.
And it's been going on for 12 years now. How long has the run been happening for?
The first run, I believe, was in 2012,
Or
and we
2012,
haven't
yeah.
actually done it each and every year, but lately we've been doing it every year because we have more help.
Yeah, and Dustin, I don't know if you heard Brian mentioned Tom Francis. And Moose Stew and Tom Francis bread for us, or otherwise known as Demosis. It's our fry bread. It's our our the official running meal, recovery meal for us here. And Dustin, you'll be, as you mentioned, you'll be coming here to Maine here in the future for a workshop that you're doing in collaboration and support with Wabanaki Reach. And I'm wondering if you could just share a little bit of information about that upcoming workshop here.
Yeah, you bet. I'm super excited to be traveling out there with some of my colleagues with Wings. But on May 8th, there are going to be two showings of a documentary called Remaining Native, which profiles the story of a young man named Ku Stevens, Kutovin Stevens. He's from Yerington Paiute in Nevada. But a couple years back, he decided that he was going to do what he calls a remembrance run because his great grandfather escaped from boarding school and ran back to his tribal homelands, I think at least two times, maybe three times, before they finally just let him be and told him that he could stay on the res. But this is really a 50-mile run from Stewart Indian School, is where he was in boarding school, back up and over a mountain range to their reservation at Yerington Paiute. And so the film that which will be shown twice at Black Bear Theaters on May 8th really sh shares not only the story of him promoting this remembrance run and bringing people in, but also him using running as a way to distinguish himself through the course of the film. He is trying to get the attention of the coaches at Oregon and really wants to run at Oregon. And I won't give away the film, but so it really is like this conversation that we're having now. The film kind of juxtaposes this, the modern sort of attitude and use of running versus something that really creates community and creates connection to landscape. So we're excited to show that, but I'm more excited for the following day. On May 9th, we'll be hosting a free running camp for kids ages 6 to 18, or kids even older than that, if you want to come, as long as you'll participate in the games that we're going to play. We'll have you. It'll start at 10 a.m. And through the course of the day, we'll be going through, as I mentioned before, the basics of how do you warm up for a run responsibly? How do you cool down from a run responsibly? And then, more importantly, moving together, both continuous movement for, going for a run as a group and feeling what that feels like, but also then just playing tag games and ball games and all sorts of games for the remainder of the day that Wings has seen great success with over the years. Like I said, our high school and college age facilitators learning how to just get kids moving. And that's really our aim on the ninth, is to get kids moving and to encourage them to learn a little bit more about their heritage and their history as runners, and to embrace running as an activity that connects them to their landscape and possibly allows them to do fun things like go to college or race in Boston at the marathon or who knows what, right? But at its core, really, as an ancestral activity that connects us to our landscape and helps us know ourselves better. And listening to Brian speak about the Alewife Run is just really inspiring. And the last 10 years or so, I have also been fortunate to begin to engage more often in what we call prayer relays, where we're running not to distinguish ourselves, but really for a cause with good hearts and with good minds towards something that is important to us, mostly the land. And so in recent years, I've been very fortunate to help organize runs in support of the protection of areas like Bears Ears National Monument. Or a few years back, we ran from, again, the issue of dams, right? We ran from Lake Powell, from Glen Canyon Dam to Lake Mead, Hoover Dam, where here in the West, the damming of the Colorado River in so many places is crucial to the survival of human beings because they need that water in cities like Los Angeles, Phoenix, Las Vegas, all over the place. But it also has wreaked havoc on our environments and the natural flow of things, quite literally. And, in the Southwest, we don't have the same migration of spawning fish. But through the course of those runs, we've learned about those tribes from Northern California, from Washington, that are also running for the fish and for their spawn, their right to spawn, and their right to help continue this cycle of really just living that feeds everyone, as the Alewife does. And I do believe wholeheartedly that with a group of like-minded and good-hearted individuals, you can do things like bring dams down. And I think it's very appropriate or very telling that, Brian says the first Alewife run was in 2012. And earlier in this conversation, he said the dam came down in 2013. So, it's no doubt in my mind that the footsteps of that first run and first relay had a major impact on the ultimate result, which is hopefully the restoration of our ancestral ways. When I would say our ancestral ways, just all the creatures. Where we can, do what we were put on this earth to do and contribute to one another in the ways that Creator intended us to.
Yeah, Willie One, thank you for making those connections. And we're really looking forward to you being a guest in our homelands here and us being good hosts for you. Hopefully, no promises. No, just kidding. And we're running out of time here, running out of time in our conversation here today. So I just want to kind of remind our listeners of the events coming up. So on a Friday, May 8th at Black Bear Cinemas in Orono, Maine, Wabanaki Reach will be offering two free screenings of Remaining Native, a film by Haudenosaunee director Paige Bethman. There will be a matinee at 1:30 and an evening show starting at 6 p.m. And that will be followed, the 6 p.m. screening will be followed by a discussion with Paige, the director. And the film Remaining Native is a documentary that is told from the perspective of Koo Stevens, a 17-year-old Native American runner struggling to navigate his dream of becoming a collegiate athlete as the memory of his great-grandfather's escape from an Indian boarding school begins to connect past, present, and future. And then following the film on the next day, on May 9th, 2026, Wabanaki Reach will then be hosting a running camp for Wabanaki youth, led and supported here by Dustin Martin, our guest, and the organization that he's coming from, Wings of America. And the Alewife Run on Saturday, May 23rd, 2026. And I'd also just like to give both you, Dustin and Brian, to share anything that you might have missed. Want to give out any places where we can find your work, organization, or anything you'd just like to share for a closing here.
Well, I just want to thank Dustin and Nolan and Nick. I learned a lot from Dustin, very encouraging. It's nice to see Native people be positive role models for our youth and our communities, and it's really encouraging and nice to see.
Thank you, Brian. It's also a pleasure to meet you, even virtually, and hear about your efforts. It's really encouraging just to know that as Native runners, we are operating on the same wavelengths across continent, and that is wonderful. And I can't wait to continue this work that I've done for 15 years, hopefully uniting more Indigenous people around this knowledge of running and really the relationships that come from running, and the friendships that come from running, because there's no better form of accountability in my mind than relying on someone to cover some miles, right? Like if they show up and they cover those miles, no matter what pace, you're appreciative and you're thankful that it's not your own feet or your own legs that had to bridge that gap, especially when you're running in prayer. And so I'm really looking forward to making a trip out that way, leading youth through activities and sharing with them some of our pride in running. Because here in the Southwest, we're very fortunate. You go to the New Mexico or Arizona State cross country and track meet, and it looks like a powwow. There's natives all over the place. And, we want that. We want that for everyone, for every Native runner around the country to feel like they have community and that they're supported and that they're encouraged to cover their ancestral landscapes as our ancestors did. So, Kiahetnitz'ago, thank you very much to each of you, and I'm really looking forward to visiting your homelands.
We won. So, as Nolan said, they call it Tom Francis bread in Passamaquoddy country, but here on the island we call it Oak Hill bread. So we'll have to see if we can hook you up with both.
All right, cool.
All right. So I just want to thank both Dustin Martin and Brian Altivater for being our guests today on Dawnland Signals. Thank you to the listeners for joining us today. Be sure to join us next month on June 2nd and every first Tuesday of the month for Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Stay tuned for more great programming here on WERU FM. Upchich Gunamiel.
Upchurch, 41.